Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Thursday, August 4th, 2011. I'm Chris Andre, and my guest this morning is Susan Lindau. We are very fortunate to have Susan here with us live in the KBOO studios. Lindau, as many listeners know, is the American journalist, author, anti-war activist, and a former CIA asset who is accused of conspiring to act as an agent for the Iraqi intelligence service and engaging in so-called prohibited financial transactions involving the government of Iraq under Saddam Hussein. All charges were dropped in 2009 prior to any trial. Lindau is charged with being, wait for it, an enemy non-combatant. She was incarcerated at a women's psychiatric prison, which was a one of the nation's very secretive communications management units in Carswell, Texas. More about a communications management unit later in the program. Essentially, what this is a supermax prison for people accused of thought crimes and whose words are so dangerous to the government that they must be silenced even while behind bars. She was told she could be held there indefinitely. Susan will be at Portland. She's written a book called Extreme Prejudice. Susan will be at Portland State University all day today as part of the Veterans for Peace Conference. She'll be signing copies of her book, Extreme Prejudice. This evening she'll be doing a reading at the Lucky Lab on Hawthorne Street. Susan is an extraordinarily generous reader and a communicator, and will be there to talk to people and answer questions about her story. She is a survivor in the truest sense of the word. We will be taking calls from listeners. I want to welcome Susan Lindau to KBOO. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. I am so delighted to be here. As you know, I went through a Soviet gulag kind of situation. They decided that if I was against the Bush administration, there must be something wrong with my thinking, not something wrong with the war, not something wrong with the war on terrorism, but that those of us, that dissidents who pose a threat to the government must be subjected to the Patriot Act, and I was indicted for that.
The number to call is 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. If you've got questions for Susan, I want to ask you how this all started. What happened? What did you do? How did you piss them off so much? Talk about the girl who kicked the hornet's nest. This is the real thing.
Yeah, this is the real thing. I was actually an asset covering the Iraqi embassy at the United Nations for 8 years, and I was privileged to know the real story, the real facts of Iraqi pre-war intelligence, which are very different than what you had been told. My team gave advance warning about 9/11. My team also developed a comprehensive peace framework that would have achieved all U.S. goals without firing a shot. Everything from democracy reform, contracts for American corporations in rebuilding Iraq, telecommunications, transportation, factory production, hospital care. This would have been a peace dividend, just with massive benefits for U.S. Shareholders. If you big corporate paybacks, American workers. This would have been great for everybody. And
it's a complete win-win situation.
It was a complete win-win situation, and there was also cooperation with the war on terrorism. The Iraqis wanted to give us financial records on Al Qaeda, so that we could have pinpointed the pipeline where the money was being held and how it was moving throughout, from the Middle East to Europe to Indonesia, India, Pakistan. The whole complete network would
Can
have been exposed.
Can you say that again? That's something that never did come out. Susan's story, of course, was front page news when it was happening, and then buried because, of course, it was dangerous to do the powers that be, the war machinery. But again, talk about the financial end of things just a bit more, just to reiterate that point.
I was arrested 30 days after I requested to testify on Capitol Hill about the peace framework and the Iraq's cooperation with the war on terrorism.
The financial pipeline.
Iraq tried to give us financial banking records and banking transaction records showing how the money was, how Al-Qaeda was moving money throughout the world and where the money was being held. And it would have been one of the greatest bonanzas greatest windfalls in the war on terrorism if the Bush administration had taken it. But the Bush administration refused to accept those documents, which is very interesting because it raises questions as to where exactly they're afraid that money might be held. But instead, they left the money in circulation. And it's significant because the financing for terrorism comes from heroin trafficking largely, and it's heroin trafficking out of the Baqa and out of Afghanistan. And so that this illicit drug dollars are being used by the terrorists to finance their operations. So we would have actually caught two things. We would have got the heroin trafficking money and the terrorism money, because they're the same dollars.
Well, many though have claimed, and many, of course, on the left say that made the point that Al-Qaeda and Iraq are two utterly separate entities.
Yes,
but
sure.
there was information about these financial channels.
Well, now it's very significant because, contrary to what everybody was told, Saddam Hussein was one, and the Iraqi government were one of our very best sources on anti-terrorism throughout the 1990s. Saddam was deeply paranoid about all religious fanaticism, and he was afraid that they would take advantage of his the weakening of the central authority of Iraq under the sanctions. And so he tracked these people mercilessly. And we had established a base covering Iraq as a back channel in 1996. And so I was having meetings at the Iraqi embassy in New York every 2 to 3 weeks. And terrorism was a big issue for us throughout that period. So no one ever had to worry about Iraq and terrorism because they were one of our greatest supporters and greatest allies before 9/11 ever happened. Saddam recognized that was one of his strengths. And he played to that very heavily to show that he was with the Americans and with the West on against these radical fundamentalists.
So that's fascinating because obviously then that information as well has been suppressed. And the left, of course, does love to say, well, Saddam Hussein and Iraq had absolutely nothing to do with Al-Qaeda. Well,
true.
They did know where the bodies were buried.
Oh, yeah, they made sure they knew where the bodies were buried. It was to their advantage to help us, and they recognized that they needed everything that they could get. And so they had done that for us for years.
Talk about, what happened when you presented your findings before it was a congressional hearing?
Well, what I tried to do, George Bush had just announced that he was going to have a presidential commission on Iraqi pre-war intelligence. And the gatekeepers were, of course, the Republican Party. So I immediately contacted Senator Trent Lott's office and Senator John McCain's office asking to testify. And the beauty of the Patriot Act, which is really funny, is that all of these conversations are caught on tape on my telephone. So I have proof. We actually have the transcripts that were created by the FBI of my contacts with Senator Trent Lott's office. We've got all the contacts. And I can prove every word of this is true. But what happened is they realized that all this stuff was going to come out in the public and that the story that they were trying to invent to tell you was very different than the truth. So then within 30 days of my contacts to these people, I woke up one morning to hear pounding on the door and the FBI was outside my door. And I'm like, what are you doing here? You've got the wrong house. I was getting up to make coffee. And I was not a bank robber or a drug dealer or a murderer. I was an American citizen who'd worked against terrorism and opposed war. And lo and behold, they have an arrest warrant for me on the Patriot Act. And I was subjected to secret charges, secret evidence, secret grand jury testimony. I was held under indictment for 5 years, but I was never allowed to have a trial. Even though I had an attorney who was arguing that I was perfectly capable of assisting in my defense, they said, no, no, we've decided that you are not competent to stand trial, over the objections of the attorney. It was extraordinary.
Hold that thought. And with that, and no hearing whatsoever, we do have a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. Brian, welcome to KBOO. Go ahead. Caller? Do you have a question for our guest, Susan Lindauer? Well, we'll roll on. The FBI is arresting you, and you've not even had an opportunity to testify.
Let me tell you something that I haven't told before, and that I want to be really clear on this, because at the beginning of the show, you talked about how I was indicted for conspiracy with Iraqi intelligence. This was actually very important, because during the 9/11 investigation, my team had gave advance warning about 9/11. We also did the 9/11 investigation. I had an Iraqi citizen who was in the Mukhabarat, the Iraqi Secret Service. And he was willing to work with the FBI, identifying terrorists moving around the country, who they were, when they entered the country, where they were staying, all their activities. And this would have subjected him to grave danger, and he might have been tortured and killed by Saddam's government if they found out. And I was then indicted on conspiracy charges for recruiting this man to help the United States, which is very extraordinary. So it shows the deep deception in the war on terrorism. At worst, it shows the mediocrity of the government not understanding how terrorism investigations get done. And it shows total bad faith in presentations to the public.
And exactly. We do have a caller on the line. Brian is with us. Good morning, Brian. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning. Wonderful. Good on you. Forgot your name already. I have two questions, maybe three. One I've been looking at for a long time is, how they've built the biggest U.S. embassy in the world in Baghdad, and that, the time it takes, I'm an architect, and I know the time it takes to get something like that done, especially through the Fed. So when did they begin planning that huge embassy that you can see from space, if, as they claim, they didn't have oil interests at heart, or they didn't want to take over the country? And secondly, that's when I've done a lot of research about this, and I've even talked to Lisa Loving about doing a program on it. Nobody's ever answered this question.
I don't know when they started planning the embassy, but you're correct. It would have taken a long time to do. This has been a bad faith venture. This was never about weapons of mass destruction. Iraq would have given us their oil without stealing it. This was about a vendetta. This was a poorly conceived war on terrorism. But the war on terrorism is not about the protection of the people. The war on terrorism is about the military-industrial complex and boosting defense spending, because it's one of the last things that we actually produce in this country, which is weapons systems. And it's all government financed. It's almost a socialist system. I have to say that our Pentagon budget is about socialism. It's kind of funny.
Corporate socialism.
Corporate socialism.
Yeah, but do you think so? You think that the embassy was, I don't know how anybody with any common sense can't see this, that it was basically going to be the Middle East center for the spread of the weapon systems.
It's basically a showroom.
It's a showroom. Yeah, it's a showroom. And I would say also that it is a staging ground for war against Iran. I am very gravely concerned about that we will end up in a war with Iran. This is a very serious, serious problem. And they're trying to set up a base for, I think there's probably a communications satellite compound where they are tracking what's going on in Syria. There's tracking in Turkey. They're tracking all over the Middle East. And that's why it's the biggest and the most wasteful expenses. It's also very shoddy construction, I understand.
I've been following this carefully, but it's hard to get any news about it. One more question, and I'll get off the air, is do you think Saddam was silenced by the Bush people, although he was tried by an Iraqi judge? I'll take the answer off the air, and thank you very much.
Well, actually, I think that Saddam wanted to be friends with the United States, and yes, they had to kill him off because they didn't want anyone to know all about the peace. You know, they didn't want anyone to know about the peace framework. They thought that if they killed off Saddam, the rebel forces, the rebel insurgency would die off because they would see that there was no one to protect, no one to push back up, and they obviously made a terrible mistake, because it had nothing to do with Saddam. They thought that the occupation would end if Saddam died, and they were completely wrong.
Got one more call. Thanks for that, Brian. We got one more call. Good morning, Joanne. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hello. I asked this out of desperation, out of pain and sorrow, because all these horrible wars and things are going on. I realize I'm a non-intellectual type, but would our military do better work if they were to go into Mexico and that and clean up the drug cartels and that?
I think that's a very intellectual question.
Well, anyway, I think wherever the U.S. military...
I hate just asking questions. I'd like to... Oh, okay. Thank you very much.
I think that's a very good question. Do we have a national security threat that's closer to home, which is more potentially damaging to our country than something that is 6,000 miles away in the Middle East? And I would have to say that perhaps that is true. It gets very complicated when you start talking about the drug crimes in Mexico and whether we should be using the United States military to do that. We already have the Drug Enforcement Agency. There's all sorts of immigration issues. But I will keep this. I'll turn this back to the Middle East, that I don't think that the Middle East poses the severe threats to us. I think that we pose the threat to ourselves, and we are exacerbating these problems through our occupations and our violence. We are creating enemies where there would not be any, where people would want to be friends of the United States if we just gave them a chance. But people hate to be bombed, and it's narcissistic of us to believe that they are not disturbed by our violent actions. This is George Bush essentially launched a Christian crusade against the Middle East. And that's not to say that all Christians are violent people at all, but he made this a religious war. And they did not come after us. They had nothing to do with us.
They want nothing to. They would very much like the United States leadership. Witness, of course, the drone attacks in Pakistan and the effect that that's having. Many people have pointed out that, of course, the drone attacks are far more dangerous to American security than anyone running around in these remote hills and villages in the far north of Pakistan. It's just not simply not a credible argument from any point of view, and particular standpoint of military advance is preposterous. The drone attacks, of course, just amount to more terrorism. But I want to ask you about your experiences. Very few people know about what communication management units are and what goes on there. And, of course, that is intentional. We're not supposed to know. These are, again, thought crime prisons where people whose ideas are so dangerous that they have to be silenced. Can you talk a bit about your experiences there?
This is a very important question that you're asking. This prison, Carswell, first of all, Carswell Prison houses ordinary women. It's not a psychiatric prison. It has a psychiatric unit on it. But it is a full-scale prison, and a lot of political women are being housed there. Women involved in the plowshares movement, women opposing taxes. Lynn Stewart is there. Other women involved in
Marie Mason, too, for that matter.
Mason is there. And it's important because you're locked up in prison inside a military base. And I will give you an example. I had an uncle who had an uncle who is one, a family member, but two, he was an attorney on my case. And he was denied access to the military base. They just said, first they said there was no prison on the base. Then they said there were no prison hours that he could visit. And he drove 700 miles in each direction to see me, and they would not let him on to conduct a legal visit. Because at this point, I had a public defender who had totally failed, who was totally lost, totally swamped by what the feds were doing, had no idea. So I had a family member jump in to try to save me and get my freedom, and they would not allow him onto the base. And so what's happening is you can forget TV interviews, you can forget any sort of media. The media is completely blocked off from access to these political prisoners. You are not going to have contact with anyone who might save you, who might give you a platform to tell your story, because they're not going to be. You're just completely shut off. It's like Bradley Manning, except Bradley Manning had a better situation because he was allowed to have visitors. But these other in this communication center place, you're not allowed to have visitors. It's like you are kept in community. Because they don't want you to have a platform, and you're not going to have attorney visits on a regular basis. You're not going to have media contact. You are completely in isolation.
And they did try to obtain compliance from you through various methods. What sorts of it has been said by many people that what goes on in some of these places amounts to torture. Recently we saw the prisoner strike at the Supermax prison, Pelican Bay, and three other prisons in California. Many people, Human Rights Watch for that matter, has questioned the treatment of prisoners in the United States. I want to just let people know, I'm going to give all of the information about where you can get the book, a copy of the book signed, where you can meet Susan, and where you can hear her read it. We'll do all of that at the end of the show, so stay tuned, and we'll be giving that out at the very end. Yes, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Okay. The thing about Carswell is I was arrested on the Patriot Act. And the Patriot Act has a whole different set of rules that that you would never expect. The FBI had no requirement to confirm that witnesses had verified my story. Like I had a defense. I had a very good defense. And I was like, look, I was a United States asset. I was supervised by the CIA and the Defense Intelligence Agency. And I'm perfectly capable of going into trial and proving that. But of course, if we'd gone into trial and proved that, then you all would have known that there was a whole bunch of hinky. I think it was hinky is the nice word for it.
Yes.
Some really crazy stuff that was going on. And that would have defeated the purpose of reinventing the pre-war intelligence and reinventing the war on terrorism, which, you know, right now you have no idea what actually happened. You don't know anything. Their lie succeeded, and part of it succeeded because of the corporate media, which refused to help challenge these lies. They swallowed the lies. They protected the politicians who then pretended to have been deceived by bad intelligence. Well, I was the intelligence asset, and we had a peace framework. We warned about 9/11. I was a devout anti-war activist. I had created a database of an email database of every chief of staff, every legislative director, every foreign policy advisor, and every press secretary on Capitol Hill in the House and the Senate, 435 members of Congress, 100 senators. And I pounded these people with direct information, direct contacts, warning about the consequences of this war, telling them there would be no weapons of mass destruction, informing them about the peace framework so that they knew they had a choice. They knew that they could achieve everything without firing a shot. And they did not want you to know that, ever.
We've got another caller on the line. Good morning. We do not, in fact, have a caller on the line, which gives us one more minute to talk with Susan to wrap this up. If you want to hear more, of course, today at PSU, Susan and Daryl will be at the Veterans for Peace Conference all afternoon, I believe. She'll be there. She's got copies of the book, Extreme Prejudice, available, and she'll sign a copy of the book for you. And if you have other questions, then you might be able to ask them. Again, tonight is the big event. Susan will be speaking and reading from Extreme Prejudice at the Lucky Lab on Hawthorne, and it'll be at 8 p.m. We'll post more information, more detailed information, phone numbers, contact information if you need that, and directions if you need that. Right now, though, we'd like to just wrap up the program. Susan, since what you've been through was absolutely extraordinary, there were parts of the book where I had to stop reading. Many people say it reads like a crime thriller, like nothing they've ever heard before. It's all true. It's all documented. There's tapes to prove it. The feds taped their own. The feds managed to tape their own folly. And how have you survived? How do you manage it?
I had a wonderful supporter, a companion, who died, unfortunately, right before my hearing. He never lived to see it, but he refused to let me feel sorry for myself. He said that and he was right. I stood up for the values I believed in, and I defended the values that I believe in, and I believe in taking the consequences for the values I believe in.
Very few people do that. As we say, get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. And I can't think of anyone who personifies that credo more deeply than Susan Lindauer. And I want to thank you very much for being our guest this morning.
Thank you.
Our guest has been Susan Lindauer. She's, of course, former CIA asset. She is a writer, journalist, and a survivor. Thanks again for that. And I want to draw a line of the fact, not a victim. No victims here.
I'm not a victim.
Thanks again for that, Susan.
Thank you.